tarnished. My roommates and my names caught behind a yellowed plate. Actually, mine had slipped so that Alvarez appeared just below the edge of the frame. I tugged it the rest of the way out and threw the scrap on the ground. For better or worse, I'd be out of this apartment soon enough. I grabbed the stack of envelopes and mailers and shut the door. Footsteps coming down the stairs behind me rattled the banister. "Hey!" I looked up. My roommate, wearing a bathrobe over jeans, carrying car keys. "Hey, I'm going for coffee," she said as she passed me. "Okay." I watched her walk toward a sagging Impala parked too close to the curb. Her steps were slow and heavy, but straight. Probably just hungover. Of all my questionable roommates, I had to admit that this one had worked out pretty well. She was a sleepy drunk, rather than a delusional one. Self-absorbed and undemanding, prone to go limp rather than drive a car at her worst. So it didn't trouble me to watch her sink into the driver's seat and start it up. Better still, she had a father who paid her share of the rent on time. Little favors. The car coughed to a start and pulled away, puffing clouds of blue smoke. I went back to the mail. UCLA class of 1978. "Do you have your cap and gown yet?" demanded the postcard on top. I flipped past. Electricity bill, sale flyer from Tower Records, something from a law office addressed to my roommate. A letter from Lockheed I didn't need to open because that pimply shit Terrence from second quarter general relativity had already told me he'd gotten the job that had been my last hope. Then I saw my grandmother's handwriting and stopped. It's not as if getting something from her was uncommon. Far from it. Her letters were usually short and, of themselves, insignificant.
"We had a late storm, and Merle lost two calves. Real nice ones. School closed around here for 2 days. The snow is already pulling back up the slopes, though. So this'll be gone real soon. I'll probably be able to get back to the cabin in 2 or 3 weeks."
They said that as far as she was concerned, it didn't matter that I lived in California, that I had always been as much a part of her life in Colorado as the snow and the calves, and that I always would be. The easy, impersonal notes invited easy, impersonal responses. So it never took me long to answer. We probably exchanged letters every 2 or 3 weeks, and had since I was old enough to write. I tucked the rest of the stack under my arm and worked my thumb under the flap. Folded inside the envelope was a single sheet torn from a legal pad, yellow and lined, with my grandmother's angular writing nearly filling the page.
"My dear Elena, do you remember Paul and Carrie? Out on the east edge of town, Paul fixes my truck. He has that mark on his neck. They have 2 children, and now Carrie's gone. Paul drives a truck some, and is gone a few days at a time. Are you still looking for a job? If you can put it off a few months and come help out this summer, that'd be real good. Folks are all doing what they can, but they can't take those kids full-time much more. It's hard on the kids, too. Nobody can pay you anything, but you won't spend anything either. It'd give Paul more time to save money and figure out what to do. This is just all so sudden. Let me know, quick as you can. Tua."
I looked out over my roommate's empty parking spot with the oil spots on the pavement toward the stucco face of the Whispering Palms apartments across the street, rust stains weeping from the corners of the windows. A few shreds of morning fog were still caught in the lower leaves of the jacarandas. An old woman labored along the sidewalk beneath them, pulling grocery bags in a child's wagon. What did she mean by gone? Dead? Run away? Imprisoned? And why? What had happened? How old were the children?